again, I can only tell you what the evidence is. The evidence of the other translation, which says came over and killed him and cut his head off, supports me. The works of Pseudo-Philo support me. And if you choose to ignore the evidence, in order to have a man who will wage nonstop war with our neighbors, such is your right. But I can tell you this, not a few of his descendants will cause us problems.
I have one second question before we allow the honorable representative of the accused to speak.
I'm not honorable, I work for a living. Hashtag
it says in the first convention of the Geneva Accords that at all times, and particularly after an engagement, the parties to a conflict...
Wait, family law, that's her.
Parties to an engagement must take steps to protect against pillage and to prevent against goods being despoiled.
Yes.
This is Article 15.
Article 15. Yes.
Can you tell us how, on the face of the record, where the Israelites returned from chasing the Philistines, they plundered their camp?
Right.
How David was or was not in compliance with Article 15 of the First Convention of the 1949 Geneva Accords?
First, let me say this. 1949 A.D.? Because 1949
B.C.
was a good year for us.
And the building was coming along.
A very good year for us. So I utterly and completely reject your international law for frankly incredibly obvious reasons that repeat themselves on an annual basis. But sure, he's also a war criminal.
We'll have questions for him. Yeah. Are there other questions? It seems clear to me that the jury is not very persuaded, but be seated.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you.
Counsel?
Before you begin, counsel, I just have one quick housekeeping. I note your name is Saul Friedman. Are you in any way related to the accused who is the son of Saul?
The accused is the father of Saul. Okay. And to be clear, no, there's no relation between me and Solomon, the wisest of all men. It's purely coincidental.
Just an update. The score's still 1-0 for Montreal.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm sure the accused is happy.
There are three people spoken of in our holiest literature. The Shlemiel, the Shlemazel, and the Schmuck. When renowned Yiddishists sit down to study this phenomenon, a parable, a wise tale, is conveyed. A waiter walks into a restaurant with a bowl of piping hot soup. A patron sticks out his foot, tripping the waiter, causing the soup to fall in the lap of another guest. The Yiddishists teach us, the waiter is the Shlemiel. The patron with the soup dumped in his lap is the Shlemazel. And that man, cruelly, callously, for no reason but his own amusement, stuck out his foot to trip that waiter, is the schmuck. But enough about Lauren Goldstein.
Would you care to approach the bench?
I thought I'd paid you before. I take issue with every aspect of the prosecution's case, but I'll begin with the most basic. Jurisdiction. Apparently, my client is being tried in the kingdom of King Saul. The prosecutor tells us he works for no other. He is the chief prosecutor of Saul, king of Israel.
For Saul, of your client.
It's possible, of course, I should note, that's Saul, S-A-U-L as in better call. I'm Saul, S-O-L as in Solomon.
As
I act
wants.
For David. Indeed. But has my learned friend, the esteemed prosecutor, forgotten his history? Or perhaps he snoozed through Sunday school like so many of us. Has he truly forgotten the book of Samuel, chapter 16? I noticed that the court's excerpt didn't include, conveniently, the portion about my client and Samuel, prophet of Israel. What happened between those two men? What ceremony was performed? What ceremony displaced Saul as king of Israel and anointed my client, David, as the rightful king? That's right. Before this alleged offense was even committed, King Saul had been deposed in law. His court has no power, no jurisdiction.
Counsel, hold on. I'm sorry, counsel.
We're invited. We're interrupting, counsel. Go ahead.
Yes, your honor.
Yes.
No, majesty works. this concept you're talking about of this anointment, my understanding of this anointment process was not that it was definitive as to say this person is now assuming the office of, in this case, the king, who is incidentally also the employer of these three judges, I'll just point out.
I'm glad we're all independent here. Go ahead. Yes. No, please.
I would like to understand, are you suggesting that as soon as David was anointed, legal authority to rule over the kingdom passed from the court of King Saul to a child?
Yes.
And then incidentally, an accused murderer?
Yes, and of course we'll get to my client's status as a child, as a minor before the law shortly. But what I would say is very simple. If we want to know whether King David is eligible to hold the throne, there's one simple thing to do. A reference to the Supreme Court of Canada. Is he indeed entitled to hold that office? I'll hold that in abeyance. Perhaps our prime minister will win one yet. I don't know.
No, I still don't understand. You're saying that as soon as he was anointed, he was the king.
Well, at the very least, by the time this matter arrives in this court, the jurisdiction of King Saul has ended. King David is the crown, and guess what? He pronounces himself innocent.
This is wrong.
Oh, yes, I apologize. A poster has been produced, perhaps from Staples or some other location. You're right.
Very, very...
Okay, speaking about annoying. come along, make an argument.
Can I remove this?
This is a case where the defense is blessed with an embarrassment of riches when it comes to defenses. But I'll begin with the most basic that I'm certain will speak to each and every member of this jury. Also a fact not read out by our learned Chief Justice. Just a coincidence, I'm sure. Verse 25 tells us what King Saul promised the Israelite who would defeat Goliath. He'll give great wealth to him. Okay. His daughter in marriage. Okay. But he saves the best for last. He will exempt his family from taxes in Israel. We stand here on April 26th before an audience largely made up of Jews. I rest my case. To be exempted from taxes in Israel, I think anything is forgiven. But we'll move on. We'll move on.
Remind you, this is not an audience. This is a jury.
A jury of my client's peers. One he is honored to be tried before, as opposed to being tried apparently before the employees of King Saul up here. My robed
David,
honors.
Our David is peerless.
Let's talk for a moment about an issue that seems to have escaped the court. The burden of proof. We know, of course, it rests on the prosecution. But how high is the standard that is to be applied? The prosecutor tells us David is fit to be put to death. Now, when I first heard him, I thought the idea of everyone getting stoned sounded like a good one. And then Wikipedia revealed that apparently it's not all that pleasant. However, how does a Jewish court decide whether or not to put somebody to death? We turn to the Mishnah, one of the ancient rabbinic texts, which tell us the following. The rabbis were discussing whether or not capital punishment was something that actually ought to be used by the Sanhedrin, the highest of all courts. The court told us there was a difference of opinion. The rabbis believed that a court that put a man to death once in every 7 years was a destructive court. Rabbi Eliezer ben Azaria, one of our greatest sages, went one step further and said a court that puts a man to death every 70 years is a destructive court. Now, I know we haven't convened a court of King Saul for some time, but I'd ask members of the jury to exercise that restraint before jumping to hasty, wild, unfounded conclusions about the guilt of my client. Now, when I came here tonight, I was certain I'd be the first one to make a remark about the Ottawa Senators and the Montreal Canadiens being a true David and Goliath battle. I'd say that as Ottawans, we knew that we root for the underdog, the David, in the battle of David and Goliath. His honor, fortunately, ruined that for me, and for you, and for everyone. But you need to understand, we have another David and Goliath battle unfolding right before you. You should ask yourself, why was David allowed to be the champion of Israel? He's not a man of any physical quality. He's but a boy. He's weak.
The record says that he is pretty.
Oh, he is pretty indeed, which of course would be helpful when facing the giant Goliath. But it was for precisely that reason that he was the champion of Israel. If he was indeed a brawny man of great fitness, great ability, a mighty warrior, then defeating Goliath would be no great feat, and the enemies of Israel would continue to scoff and say, this wasn't an act of righteousness, this wasn't the will of God, it was mano a mano. I'm bilingual, by the way. One man against another, of course he was defeated in battle. But to send a champion who was so clearly unfit and to have him defeat Goliath, well, that could not be an act of nature. It couldn't be a physical consequence. It meant nothing else but that the cause of David was the cause of righteousness. I remind David politely that it doesn't look good in the jury when you're playing on your phone in the middle of your trial for murder.
See,
but the same dynamic is at play here. Mr. Goldstein is indeed my learned friend. He is wise, he is articulate, he is clever. He is a true champion of the crown. I've been sent forward. A humble barrister.
Also humble.
Not many in years. My robes still smell of starch when his bear the mark of sweat from battle after battle.
I washed them.
Lauren Goldstein has addressed dozens of juries. I have addressed one. It was in Cornwall, so I think they probably understood every other word. But that will be the mark of this contest. If you find David not guilty, it's not because of sophistry, fancy argumentation, or skill. It's because David's cause is a righteous cause.
Sorry, counsel, I'm sorry to interrupt. Are you suggesting that righteousness is a defense to murder?
Righteousness is a defense to everything, Your Honor.
Okay.
I'm going to have a drink, and then we'll all play beer pong later. The specter of self-defense, of course, hovers over this trial. War is a messy business. War is an unpleasant business. But once again, I'd ask you, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, to expand your view behind that small snippet that we heard. That was a snapshot in time. You see, Philistines are called Philistines for a reason. Not that I would ever besmirch the character of the deceased. We all mourn with his family. But you have to understand, this was not the first engagement between the Philistines and the armies of Israel. We turn back to the book of Samuel and remember the battle of Aphek. What happened there? Where was the pleasant demeanor that we've heard of Goliath and his cohorts? Where was their kindness, their integrity then? When they slew first 3,000 Israelites, then 30,000, then did nothing less dastardly than snatch the most prized, the most holy relic of all, featured prominently in a Steven Spielberg film. Yes, the Ark of the Covenant. Stolen by Goliath and his ilk. Ilk.
Motive.
Evidence.
But they didn't just take possessions from us. They took one of our greatest prophets, the prophet Eli. Died in battle that very day. Now, this of course sets the stage for this engagement. Not between King David, mighty warrior, destructive, accused person, but between Goliath, general, champion of the Philistines, and our poor shepherd boy with a will of iron and a heart of gold.
Not there yet.
How old was David when he killed Goliath? Like all things in Jewish tradition, this is a matter of dispute. We have two Jews. You gonna ask a question, Your Honor, or are you gonna mutter?
I think that I like the documentary evidence for. Are you saying Goliath killed Eli, or that Eli was in battle?
Eli was in battle and died upon hearing the terrible news that the Ark had been taken from Israel.
And he was in battle when that happened? Oh, so he died upon hearing the news. That's what I recall.
Well, if we're going to stretch causation to this absurd end that we're doing now, I think...
You brought up the point. I think it deserves a little bit of examination. That's fine. Okay, so he died when he heard the news. Goliath did not actually kill him.
Oh, no, no. You'll recall, not once, but twice, did I use the word ilk. Ilk. Goliath and his ilk. If my client can be smeared...
He's
profiling. Philistine Lives Matter. If my...
Do you have a case?
But I digress. I challenge first the jurisdiction of this court.
The court will note, you said you digress.
And I do, frequently, and over again, and sometimes many more times thereafter.
Cornwall it is.
David, do you need my card?
How old was David when he was thrust into this unpleasant altercation with an older man? A man of might, a man of vigor, a man of command with the sword and the spear. The Bible doesn't tell us. It's a matter of dispute. But together, we can all, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, figure it out together. The book of Deuteronomy tells us that when constituting an army of Israelites, only men aged 20 and older are eligible for military service. We are further told that David was the youngest of eight. We are told as well that only three of David's brothers were eligible for military service. Let's do the math. We have three brothers, 20 and older. I did really bad on this portion of the LSAT, so if you'll bear with me.
10 fingers.
10 fingers, 10 toes.
Okay. 8 fingers.
Okay, so assuming normal birth order, assuming no unusual multiples,
could you describe what abnormal
assuming a normal gestation period as well, most scholars agree that David would have been a maximum of 15 years old. There's a word for that under international law. Was he a child soldier? Omar Khadr called. He's out on bail. I'm just saying.
He's been granted bail.
So, he's a child.
Was Omar Khadr not found guilty in the United States?
Yes, and if we're going to dispense justice in the same manner as the military tribunals at Guantanamo Bay, we're going to be here a long time, folks.
You work with Adelson, we'll be here a long time.
Is David a dentist? That was good, you know.
Well, he's Jewish, so we can only assume, Your Honor. So we have this child. He is called alternatively, by the way, a na'ar in Hebrew, which many of you will know who speak Yiddish relate to the word narishkeit, foolishness.
Simple.
Just a boy.
Simple, simple.
He's also referred to as being katan. Now katan, for those of you who are clued in to your Talmudic law, has a specific legal meaning. A katan is a minor in Jewish law. A katan is not responsible for his own actions. Perhaps Jesse, father of David, should be on trial instead. But in any event, my client cannot be found guilty of an offense. But let's see this altercation. We heard about planning and deliberation. I'm shocked that we didn't hear about malice of forethought. But what really happened between David and Goliath?
Counsel, I wish to summarize what you've just said. That David, who became such a king of Israel, that David, who has been celebrated in song and text, we are prejudging the other. That this same David, that this same David is really a simple child, and therefore that the Israelites was led by a simpleton?
Can you repeat the question?
My question? I didn't hear a question. I heard a statement. But perhaps if there was a question
you,
in there somewhere.
Are you saying that David is a simpleton? He who became celebrated as the great king of the Israelites?
His counsel is.
You've heard Mr. Goldfein's words, and you've heard my words. If you've ever heard my client's sermons, I'd leave it to you to make up your own mind.
Ooh.
That's what happens when you don't pay my bills on time.
Ooh.
But how frail, how infirm was David? Now, we heard from Crown Counsel that David boastfully, arrogantly said, "No armor for me, I want to be fast and nimble. No sword for me, I want to slice with decisiveness, not with a blade, but with my sling." Nothing could be further from the truth. Let's return to the text. I'm sure this was nothing but an error, an omission on the part of Crown Counsel. He'd never deliberately mislead any of you good people. But let's, not if he could get away with it, but let's continue. We are told that David is indeed offered sword, and he is offered armor. In fact, Saul, King Saul, dresses David in his own armor. He puts a coat of mail on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David then fastens on his sword over his tunic. He puts on the armor, he puts on the helmet, he straps on the sword. He tries walking around, but he finds a quote for you.
I'm looking for the walking around.
From your own disclosure. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. "I cannot go in these," he said to Saul, "because I am not used to them." So he took them off. He was so frail and so infirm that he couldn't even stand up in a man's suit of armor. He couldn't even carry the king's sword. This wasn't an act of malice. This wasn't an attempt to gain an advantage. This was a poor boy struggling to use the only weapon he could find to defeat the champion of the Philistines and save the people of Israel.
Can I ask why he volunteered?
I mean, you take a drink of water so it appears like you're thinking.
No, might even go to, and you know, I'd also like to know if there was a psychiatric evaluation for your client, because I got to say, the idea that he cut off the head and then took it with him.
Perhaps Dr. Gray should recuse himself from this portion of the proceedings.
Well, I want to hear from him.
In general, my lord, learned as you are, of course, in all matters, criminal and civil, we usually only order those kinds of reports after the accused is found guilty. So I hope you're not prejudging this matter.
Of course not.
Okay, good. So we'll carry on. But let me ask you one more question that I hope will ring within your ears on your way to the jury room and in your deliberations therein. Did David kill Goliath? Did he do it? We live in an age of CSI, where guilt beyond a reasonable doubt is proven in 40 minutes or less, using all methods of technology, fantastic and fanciful. But did my client even do it? You see, the lot of the poor defense lawyer is that we are not equipped with forensic science. We're not equipped with police officers, biased judges. Sorry.
Excuse me.
Hand seems to have waved on its own volition. All we have is common sense. We have a radar for the truth. And unfortunately...
That is an hypothesis.
Common sense...
That you have common sense.
Well, it ain't all that common, but I don't think I have common sense, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, but I hope you do. So ask yourself a few questions. Goliath was wearing a helmet. The helmet, like all others of Philistine origin, now I know this court can take judicial notice of all things Philistine, so it's an accepted fact, even my friend alluded to it, that covers the forehead and the nose. This boy who was too weak to even carry armor allegedly flung a stone that didn't just disable. Of course, we heard about the handicaps of poor Goliath. I'm shocked that he hasn't been cyberbullied in his youth, although I'm sure evidence of that is forthcoming. It's a tragedy. Everybody has a mother. Goliath has a mother, and she weeps for him.
You too?
So I have been told. Now, this weak boy manages not just to disable Goliath, but the rock, we are told, penetrates his forehead, at least according to this translation, which, by the way, we are relying on from the New International Version of the Bible, prepared for the Young Israel of Ottawa by the Christian Reformed Church and the National Association of Evangelicals. We'll turn to the Hebrew text in a moment.
Sounds exactly like Young Israel.
Touché.
Perhaps before David arrived.
Indeed. But the board is doing something about all that. Now, we'll turn to the Hebrew text because I promise, if one thing and one thing alone, that we will all be illuminated by the richness and the beauty of the original Hebrew, much lacking in the translation of the National Association of Evangelicals. But we're left with that problem. The stone pierces his forehead. And of course we heard, thank you for taking my coup de grace. I'm bilingual. Goliath falls forward, not as one would expect if struck in the forehead by a disabling blow, not backwards. Now, of course, these are questions that the rabbis have wrestled with for centuries. Perhaps they have a lot of time on their hands. They can wrestle with these for centuries. And if you will accuse me of engaging in Talmudic hair splitting, I will remind you of the words of one of my great rabbinic masters when I studied in Jerusalem. Every hair, Shlomo, because he called me Shlomo, he said, has two sides. So the rabbis give us answers as to why David fell forward, or rather why Goliath fell forward, why Goliath's helmet didn't protect him. We are told, by the way, in another portion omitted from our reading, Goliath taunted and challenged the Israelites. He came in front of their camp every morning for 40 days. That's a really biblical number, in case anyone's wondering. And he swore an oath that we heard, either servitude or victory. Now, I'll leave you with this.
We don't know how Goliath died. We don't know how the rock thrown by a poor shepherd boy somehow disabled a mighty champion. I don't have all the answers, but that's not my job. The crown has a case to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. But I'll ask you to consider one final thing. You may not know this because it hasn't happened yet in the story, but David will ultimately be punished for the wars he waged, for the acts he committed in the defense of the Israelite people. Close to the end of his life, he asked God if, now that he has founded the capital, Jerusalem, he can build the temple. A temple that will serve as a bridge of peace between man and the Almighty. We are told in the Bible, it's explained by our sages, that David's request was denied. God said, "A man who has shed blood shall not construct my temple, even if the shedding of that blood was in righteous self-defense." Instead, that task fell to David's son, Solomon, to build that temple, to honor the legacy of his father, not a legacy of shame, but a legacy of bravery and of self-defense. Consider that, and consider that my friend has failed miserably in his attempt to prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt. And everything else, as our rabbis would say, is commentary. Thank you. Do I get questions? No questions?
Learned counsel.
It's not like I was interrupted enough, but if you have more questions.
I just have one clarification, if I may. So you are, part of your position is that the crown has failed to prove that, excuse me, that David was the cause of Goliath's death.
He asked skeptically. Yes, it was. Sorry, that's my inner monologue. It comes out sometimes.
So you're saying that the crown has failed to show that. You don't need to, because of the burden of proof, you don't need to show that there was the second shooter who may have, you're just saying the crown has not proved beyond a reasonable doubt that in fact it was your client who caused the death.
Like I said, I'm blessed in this case with an embarrassment of riches. Should this noble jury ignore the righteousness of David's cause, ignore self-defense, ignore his youth, ignore this court's lack of jurisdiction, then it should ask itself as one foundational question, has the crown proven the act, that the act was David's beyond a reasonable doubt?
Thank you.
I have a question for you.
Because that's how it works.
The judges go first.
All right.
And lawyers, not at all.
But mine will be a good question.
Why don't you ask your question to us,
all right,
and then we can ask it to him.
I like it. What is his defense? Was it righteousness, or did he not do it? Pick a horse, sir. Pick a horse and ride it. Don't wait for the translation.
You speak Klingon. Sorry, no. Star Trek, The Undiscovered Country.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. I think I've answered that, but if my friend needs to hear it again.
You need not.
Thank you. You're on.
I have a question that really go to motive here. I mean, you've told us how David was promised by Saul all sorts of wonderful things, no taxes, which personally I think is a wonderful, wonderful thing.
A
bride, a king. Marry the daughter of the king, you can inherit the kingdom. I wonder about his motives here, because first of all, you tell me also that David knew, well, David was related to the victim. Did he know him in advance? I mean, was he a mercenary, or was he trying to settle some sort of family score? If you tell me that he was promised the daughter of the king for killing Goliath anyways, then the whole anointment by Samuel is rendered moot because he would have inherited the kingdom presumably anyways on the marriage of King Saul's daughter. So I'm struggling here with the motive.
Let's go one at a time. I'll untangle this web that you have woven. First of all, he would not have inherited the kingdom. Saul had a son named Jonathan. BFFs, by the way, with my client. Much love. Look that up. So he wouldn't have inherited the kingdom. Number two, even if Saul had no sons, it's only recently that the Kingdom of England has come around to the fact that daughters can inherit in the same fashion as sons can.
You consider Queen Elizabeth to be a recent queen.
Speaking of recent... No,
queen
okay.
Elizabeth the first.
Right. So, in any event, his motive really here...
10 fingers, 8 sons, 500 years.
I'll put it this way. So, motive is not the issue before the court. Motive doesn't decide guilt or innocence. David can act honorably, he can act innocently, he can act legally. If he's promised the little goodies on the side, who's going to say no, right?
All right, so all that being said, my other question, my last question,
yes.
I'd like to know, was the slingshot registered firearm? Was he licensed? Was this a registered firearm?
That's a great question.
Registry.
Yeah.
There, no slingshots?
There's no registry, there are no longer any mandatory minimums, and it was a sling, Your Honor, not a slingshot.
Okay, very good. All right, thank you.
Well, thank you.
We have a jury, and the jury would like a rapid summation after all of these brilliant arguments from learned counsel. Counsel for the Crown has argued.
May I ask for some clarification?
Would you like to approach the bench?
No, that's fine.
Is it all right from here?
I don't know what the judge had for dinner, so
I
would resist
the
urge to approach.
If the record has whether David was conscripted into the army or was he acting as an individual at the time of this alleged crime?
If I may, Lord Chief Justice, there's no suggestion he was part of the army. He was a shepherd boy who volunteered to take on this. So I think the evidence is that he was not a formal member of the army.
And I have a second question here. The record, of my understanding of the record, that he was in fact a very good killer, because the record shows that David killed his tens of thousands and King Saul killed his thousands. So I was wondering whether the defense counsel was in fact saying he was quite pathetic, whereas the record, if I'm reading correctly, shows the opposite.
I'm going to have to rule that out of order because that's argumentative.
Yeah, but good.
But trust me, I reiterate again, if you went to Shul every Shabbos, you would know that he was indeed.
However, the member of the jury has correctly pointed out that the record does show that he killed lions and bears that attacked the flock. And consequently, he was a trained killer.
Who's it going facts now?
Are there other questions from the jury?
No, thankfully not.
Okay, the summation, briefly. Counsel for the Crown has said that David did knowingly, with premeditation, set out to kill Goliath. Secondly, he killed only after an injury was sustained. And thirdly, that Goliath was a man of great integrity and that it was a shameful act.
Shame.
And that David was so committed to carrying out such an act. Counsel for defense has said that David was young, was simple, a nar, he said, to use the Yiddish vernacular. He says further as counsel that it is not clear that David actually killed Goliath. The text does not sustain his argument. Nevertheless, that is the argument.
Chief Justice, I've just gotten an email from a member of the audience who shall remain nameless, and it says, audience getting restless.
And the third argument from the defense is that we should have pity on David. These are the three essential arguments for each side. It is up to the jury to draw its conclusion.
So how does that work? Are they going to vote?
Do you want to hold hands?
For the polling. Members of the jury who consider David to be guilty of murder premeditated. Murder most foul. I would ask you to raise your right hands.
Very good. Yeah. Good. All right.
Members of the jury who consider David to have been acting in a righteous in a self-defense manner, I would ask you to raise your right hands.
Right hands.
It seems evenly divided to me.
No, no, it doesn't, Your Honor. If we have to pull them, we'll be here all night. So,
he needs a psychiatric assessment.
Who, counsel?
Very good. I think that the counsel's learned counsel have presented exceptionally able, exceptionally well-informed, and exceptionally foolish arguments that have led us to conclude, members of the jury, that David is innocent of the crime of which he was accused.
Oh.
As the Department of Justice's special advisor on wrongful conviction, I need to just clarify that the jury has found him not guilty. That does not necessarily make him innocent.
And
that's it. So now we.
Do you have no further comments?
David, I think.
You're free to go, sir, with the apologies of this court, something like that?
David is entitled to make a statement now to now that we've heard the verdict. So, David, do you have any words to say?
Yes, I do.
For those who are used to hearing David in synagogue,
first of all, I'd like to thank all of you for the opportunity for finally giving me a situation where Solomon will not be able to leave when I further, I'd like to thank you that in spite of my choice of counsel, you have found in my favor. And because of your great effort and your wise decision tonight, for thousands of years, the Jewish people will always be singing, David Melech Yisrael, thy victory, David Melech Yisrael, thy victory.
This is our court of law.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
All right.
All right. Court is
adjourned.
And please remain seated.
You can sit.
It's okay.
You can sit. You can schmooze.
Talk
amongst yourselves.
Is all of young Israel this well organized?
Thank you all very much for coming. How many of you enjoyed our first Trial of the Ages? Yeah. Can we do it again? Excellent, very good. Thank you.
With qualified judges?
What's the score? Still 1-0?
Yeah, it's still 1-0. It's second intermission.
Oh my God. Second intermission already?
Yeah.
I think you got up easy. Despite the council.
Big trouble.